Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Cock-a-doo.
Eric Asherslager.
Hi there.
Daryl Loomis.
Howdy-ho.
And you know how this works. Kill some time for you so you can enjoy the weekend and the fall weather and maybe go pick some apples. Or do I have apples in Texas?
No, but they do have 95-degree days.
All right. So go out and play some 95-degree days.
Fun.
Okay, so Mac, why don't you lead us off and just inform the listening public what you've been up to this last week?
Let's see. Well, I don't know if it's really something geeky or not, but I saw this really great documentary. As you might have heard of it, it's called Good Old Frida. It's the story of a young woman at the time who was the president of the official Beatles fan club. All during the whole era that the Beatles were performing as a band, she became the president of their fan club when they were still in Liverpool, just right before they exploded into worldwide fame. And then she stuck with them all the way to the end when they broke up. And this is just her story. And she's just this just very nice, soft-spoken, unassuming lady. You'd never know that she was part of the Beatles' inner circle for all these years, but she's sort of told her story. It's a really great documentary. It's really fun. Lots of great anecdotes about the Beatles. And I just really recommend it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Let me ask you, is it – this might cause some dissension, so just bear with me. Is it a good documentary if you don't like the Beatles?
If you don't like the Beatles?
Yes.
I think you won't get as much out of it.
Okay.
But basically,
but is it still
it's
like a cool story?
It is. It's just an ordinary young girl who found herself in the right in the middle of big historic events.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of it's seeing you know these sort of famous events happen through just this ordinary person's eyes.
Gotcha.
Those famous events being you know the big events of the Beatles and their big the history
of
them.
Big events. I mean, I may not be a huge a fan of theirs, but I do. I completely recognize you know their. Influence and the cultural impact they had. So,
yeah. So I mean, casual fans will still get a lot out of it. If someone's really you know shakes their fist at the Beatles, probably not as much because it is very Beatles centric. But it's still a really great film.
I don't shake my fist at the Beatles. I'm not a huge fan.
Okay.
All right. Very good, Eric.
I will touch briefly upon the fact that Breaking Bad is over.
Thank you.
And it ended. I think in fine fashion. I thought it was a great finale. I think that it gave me what I wanted, and I think it would take me very,
very satisfied with the ending.
Yeah, me too.
Without any spoilers.
Especially the part
Thank
where
you, Dave.
No, I'm just kidding. but it's good, Dave, because now I know with confidence I can say that at some point. You will have a wonderful television experience ahead of you from start to finish.
Start to finish.
And I look forward to hearing of your adventures.
Yeah, great. Exploits.
With all of them. Yeah, exploits. You know,
it was
illegalities.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been listening and re-listening to the final song they played.
Oh, yeah.
At
Baby
the end of the finale,
Blue.
Off and on. It's a great song. Okay. I mean, if you were going to say something else about Breaking Bad.
Oh, I was going to say that the final three episodes are some of the maybe the toughest 3 hours of television I've ever watched.
Really?
Yeah, there's some rough stuff in there.
All right.
So good stuff. And also talk a little bit more in depth, I guess, although not too long because I know, Dave, you're itching to keep going, as always.
That's right.
Got the bit is in the mouth.
That's right.
Making us chase the rabbit around the track.
The ball gag is in the mouth and we are going.
Exactly.
Way off the riding crop, Dave.
Exactly. Speaking of which, it's October, which means it's scary movie month.
That's right.
I've already kicked off, watched I think I've watched 5 scary movies so far in the first 2 days.
Wow.
Trying to keep up. I'll mention a couple of them. Actually, I'll mention one. The one that I really wanted to see, a few of the other ones were just random Netflix watches to kind of beef up the count of the 7-word reviews that you can leave over at fthismovie.net. They're doing it all month. And after 2 days, they're already up to, I think, 88 reviews. Last year, people left – over, I think they broke 1,000, which is pretty good.
Oh, excellent.
So hopefully they can do it again. I encourage all listeners to participate. But the one movie that I did want to watch, and I managed to track it down to the library, was Insidious, James Wan's film before The Conjuring.
Yes.
Which I enjoyed very much. And I liked Insidious a lot, too. It hit a lot of the same buttons for me as The Conjuring. In fact, it has a very similar structure. If you've seen one, you kind of know what to anticipate in the other one. But he definitely knows the things that scare me. There's a lot of, you know, doors opening and houses. And there's a sequence in Insidious where he hears noise outside and he goes and peeks out the window with a flashlight and doesn't see anything, which is something I do probably on a more regular basis than I'd like to admit.
Fellows out in the Northeast have a lot more opportunity to do that than me in Texas. Right. It's pretty, you know, when you shine a flashlight out there in the wilderness, it's pretty much flat ground. You can see what's going on.
Right. See all the way to Alabama if you need.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. We have a motion light on our garage, and just the wind will set it off.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But if ever I'm just like sitting in the living room at night with the lights off and that pops on, the first thing I do is peek out the window and making sure that there, you know, there's not a horde of cannibals out there to devour my family. Because you never know. You're
right. You never know.
You never know.
Those Burdette cannibals.
Insidious was – I love Insidious until 20 minutes from the end.
I like – I think, you know, maybe I'll give it like to 5 minutes from the end. I still think it holds up well, and I like it when movies have – weird creatures and entities in them.
It just felt like it was it felt like it sort of threw it at you and sort of hit you in the face with, now we're in another realm. And it seems
definitely
silly, you know, with the accordion playing and like Tiny Tim on the radio.
Tiptoes of the Tulips is a pretty terrifying song. It's second only to the opening strains of Teddy Bear Picnic, which I think is probably the scariest piece of music ever written. But I liked it. So
I like it a lot. I just don't like those last 20 minutes.
That's fair.
But I have heard really, really strong things about Insidious too.
Yeah, now I want to check that out now that I've seen this one. So
all right.
I was not happy about the idea of it, but I'll see it now.
Well, on that pleasant note, why don't you tell us what you've been doing?
I'm actually going to – this will make you happy, Dave, because I'm going to kill two birds with one stone by talking about both what I've been watching and what I will be reviewing.
Okay, very good.
So I've been watching – I've decided that – and it's been a long, long time for me, but I've decided to go ahead and go through the Friday the 13th series again. And I don't think I've seen one of them of the original series since they came out. In fact, none of them. Freddy versus Jason I didn't see twice. And I never saw the remake. But so I'm through three, and the reason that I'm watching them is because I have – for review this week, Crystal Lake Memories, The Complete History of Friday the 13th, a 6-plus-hour documentary about the history of the franchise. And this group had done one about A Nightmare on Elm Street previously, which is a series that I have a much more love for. And it was fascinating. So if I'm gonna watch the 4-hour or 6-hour documentary about the series, I should actually have fresh memories of the movies. So I'm on three. I'll get through them by the time, you know, by week's end, which sounds absurd, but it's completely possible. I guess what I'm finding is the same thing that I found when I was young, and this Friday the 13th just isn't that good.
That is true.
too bad.
It's predictable and kind of unnecessary. Like, there's not really much creativity in the series. It's the same thing every time. And I guess the difference is with Nightmare on Elm Street, you had these dream sequences that allowed writers and directors to use their imagination. and go far flung with what they were trying with what they were doing. And so, you know, the idea of just a bunch of campers getting killed one by one just doesn't wind up being that interesting. Now, with the Crystal Lake Memories, I'm looking forward to it because the series is important to people, and it does have a relevance as far as horror goes. I just don't find them that interesting. So I've been slogging through them, and I have one question about these, and other people who've seen, you know, other of us who've seen them can maybe help to answer this for me. But Jason died in 1958. When he was, what, 7, 8 years old. And spoiler alert, the mom is the killer in the original.
Yes.
The second, Jason is the killer. But Jason is like a full-grown 35-year-old male. So, in the year between the first movie and the second movie, Jason aged 20-odd years. Help me with that.
Are you saying because he was dead in the first movie?
Well, that's what they claimed. That was what Mom's whole deal was that he drowned, and that was why she was getting vengeance on the Crystal Lake campers.
Whereas really he was just growing up under the water.
Growing up
but
in
who
the water.
Raised
underwater, yeah, he grew up under the water, and then he
raised this
up.
Child.
Mollusks and such.
Raised him. You know, and I guess that's you know,
mermen.
Yeah, maybe it was mermen, but I think you've really got to make the leap to mermen to make sense of this series.
Well, part 9 does say that Jason requires a human host, and that had the spirit of Jason bouncing from body to body. So if you want to follow that part of the continuity, that
Jason
might be
9.
An explanation.
Which one was 9?
Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday.
So the doctor eats the heart.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, I can accept that. It has been a long time since I've seen them, so maybe I just don't understand the mythology yet.
I mean, that's like comparing the Michael Myers of later Halloween movies with Michael Myers of the first Halloween.
Yeah, fair enough.
If you want razor-sharp continuity, Friday the 13th isn't really the franchise.
Fair enough.
Hardly any of them even take place on Fridays. So
right.
So. All right. Oh, I like that. 2 birds with 1 stone. That's impressive. For me, man, nothing too much. I've still been staying with Sleepy Hollow. Can still kind of get a kick out of that. I've been kind of essentially recoiling in horror from the other movies, the other shows of the fall. Nothing at all looks all interesting.
It looks – the comedies look bad.
I mean, it seems like Will Arnett's got another comedy destined for an early termination.
Yeah, the premiere episode of Parks and Rec was.
Oh yeah, that's a good thing to tell you. Right, so again, Ron Swanson was the highlight, mm-hmm. and also we're gonna have no Chris Pratt for 3 months as he goes out and films his. What's he filming?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right. So, I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm with you, Daryl. I found it kind of lukewarm.
It's lukewarm. I laughed. There were 3 or 4 points where I laughed. Ron was obviously the highlight, and he's
Ron great. In Europe was excellent.
Yeah,
Ron in Europe was great.
And I guess if
they did find
just,
a way to ruin John Ralphio.
Yes,
pairing him with that terrible sister. And Henry Winkler seemed largely wasted in his role as well. So.
Yeah, although I think with some development, Henry Winkler's role could be funny. But given the recent track record of the show, I'm not really enthusiastic about it.
Yeah. Can we just admit that neither of you are actually fans of Parks and Recreation? I think you like the first few seasons, but at this point, we can just basically say that.
I'm still watching. If I watch it, I feel like I'm investing in it.
Okay, I guess what I'll say is I'm still watching, and it's far less pathetic than the final 2 or 3 seasons of The Office.
Yeah. I would say I don't dislike it. I'm holding out hope for it. I mean, mm-hmm. this first – so I was just watching some of the older episodes and laughing mightily at them. So, you know, I definitely have an affinity for the show. I just feel like it's
– Oh, yeah, sure. I feel like – you're probably waiting for it to become something it's not never going to be again. It's just different. Right? It's a different show now.
I suppose.
I want something. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm just grasping at straws, but I think that there's still a kernel of greatness in that show. The characters are still there, and they could bring it out. They just aren't.
I will probably keep watching it. I guess.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Until it becomes pathetic, then I'll keep watching because
I lament because I care. I think I lament. Because
oh, absolutely,
I cared about
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, I think that was the final few seasons of 24.
Yes.
Which is a show that I stuck with until the end.
Sure.
Although I'd say like the last three seasons, maybe two, the last season picked up a bit. I was basically making fun of the show week after week.
Right.
And so it's the same kind of thing. Like I think we were fans of 24 right till the end, but I definitely, it never became the show that I agree, the first couple of years.
So I think it's fair to say you can still be a fan of the show when it like grabbed you, you know, hooked you early on and you're pulling for it. So I still pull for it. Like I think each new 24 season, we were bringing hope, a little bit of hope, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. At some point, it became the show that it always was. Just we've seen it too many times.
Yeah, correct. But does beg the question: will the return version, not being a slave to the real time element, how will that add? How will that affect things?
It's coming back.
24 is coming back. You didn't know that?
I did not know.
It is coming back. 24 is coming back in a 13-episode mini arc, and I don't think it's real time. I think it's coming back mid-season.
Interesting. I don't know if I can.
Wow. I can't believe we never covered this.
We
essentially built like 3 years of podcasts set around 24.
you and I wrote weekly weekly recaps.
I forgot about that. Where's that content, by the way? There's good content.
Oh, it's lost.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I devoted a good chunk of my formative years. Yeah, 24 is coming back, yes.
The other part of Parks and Rec that this new one that I really liked was Andy with
Peter Serafinowicz.
Yes.
Yeah, he's great.
That's his name. Those were great sequences.
Mixed with the crushing realization that it's just an excuse for him to be off screen.
Of course, it's just an excuse for him to be off screen, but it's better than having like the pregnant, bewitched, whatever her name is, Samantha, with a pillow in front of her for half a season.
That's a good point. Right. That's a good point. All right, let's move on to others. So we already covered Daryl's, what he's got coming for review. Mac, what do you got?
Yeah, I've got some really good. It's the original House of Wax with Vincent Price.
Mm.
Actually, that's not the original because it's a remake of a 30s one, but the House of Wax, the one we all loved, Vincent Price. This is such a good movie. I really like it. It's got so much atmosphere and the atmosphere and the visuals are so rich and Vincent Price's performance is just really great. He's creepy but also kind of suave at the same time and a little tragic at the end. He's got the whole tragic monster thing happening. It's one of my favorite movies, and it looks really great on the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray also has a 3D option, and this was one of the most successful 3D movies of the 50s. So, and the first color 3D movie ever made.
Oh,
so take that, Avatar.
Not bad. Not bad.
Oh, were you able to see it in 3D? Like,
I actually don't have a 3D TV or a 3D Blu-ray player.
The reason I'm curious is because the old 3D movies that I've seen at home, which are Dial M for Murder and Amityville 3D, don't watch Amityville 3D, no matter, regardless of anything.
It's hard to endorse any Amityville thing maybe after the original.
Even the original, they're just awful movies. They've always been awful, and I don't understand how there's 11 movies that carry the Amityville name. But
so many.
Hey,
it's fun
me.
To say.
It is fun to say Amityville. But I found that older 3D conversions don't come together properly. Like there's a centimeter or two of break in the center of the frame. So you've got some depth, but you've got two images in the center. Mm-hmm. So I was curious how House of Wax resolve itself if it works that way or
because
not.
Because it's an older movie, I assumed it would come with little fold-out glasses. Like the Brendan Fraser Journey to the Center of the Earth, that came with glasses. You could watch it on any TV. And that looked really bad on 3D, by the way. But the other thing is, though, even with the right equipment, let me start over. The bad thing is that it all depends on your equipment. You know, the more fancy pants of a TV you have, the better it's going to look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although the new 3D that I've watched on my television looks really good, works really well. But yeah, it's the older process that tends to not come together properly, and it's not just distracting; it's totally unwatchable.
Yeah, but and as I was going to say, because it's 1950s 3D, it's been converted into like modern 3D, mm-hmm. which is why we don't have glasses, which is why it's a 3D Blu-ray. So it's with the conversion thing. I don't know if it's a genuine recreation of the original 3D or not. But that being said, it's such a good movie. It doesn't need the 3D.
Doesn't need 3D. It's a great movie.
This is not Piranha 3DD. This is a great. It's just great atmosphere, great story, great acting. It's everything you want in a movie. So it did. Just go ahead and put on the 2D and just enjoy it because it's just such a great movie.
For a second, I thought it said 2D, like from Facts of Life.
I was thinking 2D from Yo Gabba Gabba.
Wow, there you go.
shows where our headspace is.
That's true. Okay, Eric, what do you got?
Nothing too exciting this week. I've got a PBS cooking show reviewing, but I want to call attention to something that I reviewed during my hiatus. The Fall Series 1 is the first season of a BBC show with Gillian Anderson as a British cop trying to find a serial killer in Belfast. And it's pretty good. I liked it. Definitely enjoyed myself with it. Gillian Anderson is awfully good. And I did not know this until I was researching for my review, but she basically grew up in England. She was born in Chicago, but spent like 11 years in England, and so had a British accent when she was a kid and kind of lost it when she came back to the States. So she slips back into it pretty well. I wasn't sure whether she was going to play an American or a Brit in the show, and she's definitely a Brit, and it works pretty well. So
it's available on Netflix.
It is available. Well, on Netflix. The DVD comes out later this, or I guess 2 weeks. But yeah, it's on Netflix. So if you're at all curious, I definitely check it out.
All right, man. I don't have anything of interest.
No robot vampires and
a Dolph Lundgren movie that had like every washed up. So it was Dolph Lundgren and Billy Zane was in it, and Robert Davi was in it. That was a pretty good lineup. And then Vinnie Jones. So it was pretty good, pretty good group of C-listers, but just a punishingly boring revenge crime saga that was, I can't remember the name of it. It was one of those movies with the kind of the random, the generic action movie title generator spit out, So
it must have been a really great movie if you forget the name of it.
No, tired is Blood of Redemption. That's Blood of Redemption. Yeah, so that was kind of rough. So, that pretty much sums up what I've been pawing through. So I don't think we need to dwell on that anymore. So, Mac, take us onward.
Sure. Let's take a look at what's coming up next week on DVD and Blu-ray. And you listening at home can follow along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com. Click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. From there, we're going to scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for October 8th. And it's a busy week. There's a lot on here. Probably major Hollywood releases. We've got The Hangover Part 3, The Purge, which is a scary movie from earlier this summer.
After Earth.
After Earth from our good buddy M. Night Shyamalan.
Curse of Chucky, which I must have blinked and missed it when it came.
I think it's a direct video.
And just to say those last couple of Chucky movies are actually really good. Bride of Chucky and Son of Chucky or whatever the other one was called.
They definitely embrace the tone.
Yeah, they go full on comedy.
Pure comedy, and I think it's Brian Yuzna that directed both of those, and he's done all kinds of stupid, silly things, and he's really good at it. And those were funny. And casting Jennifer Tilly as the wife she's really funny. And they're worth watching. Where the first four aren't or first three, I don't know. They really aren't. Like, the original's terrible. They're all terrible. But those last couple, I am in full support of Bride of Chucky and Son of Chucky. Get the unnecessary Hangover Part 3.
Yeah. This is the full both part by Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, the animated ones.
Those were surprisingly good.
Yeah, I only saw the first one, but I loved it. I thought it was really great.
A movie that I tend to laugh at heartily, Airplane 2, the sequel on Blu-ray. I find Airplane 2 pretty funny. I mean, Airplane is, like, for my money, maybe one of the funniest movies ever made. If not the funniest movie. Airplane 2, I think, has got some laughs, and Shatner dominates the screen when he shows up. So
that's what I was going to say. The first part of the movie it falls into the trap of repeating a lot of the jokes from the first one.
Yes.
But man, once Shatner shows up, the movie just completely takes off. He just steals the movie.
a lot of good gags. As far as we can tell, all this machine does is blinks.
Oh shoot, we got Missing in Action coming out on Blu-ray.
Oh, Chuck Norris, yeah.
The only Chuck Norris worth fighting for. and this is Braddock at his best. On question, is this Star Wars trilogy special in any way? Or is it just...
It looks like it's a combination of Blu-ray DVD together.
Yeah, I don't believe there's any new behind-the-scenes stuff added.
Gotcha.
Okay. There's probably less, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
Super Mario World. When did this show come out? What's up with that show?
Super Mario World came out in, 1992.
It was. Okay. So it is an early...
I think it came out really after... I think it was a product of Super Mario 3. When Yoshi was first introduced. It might have been a little later than that. But it was one of those, in the vein of Pac-Man the cartoon and all of that. Cash in, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I can't necessarily say that the first season of American Horror Story was great, but I found it compelling enough that I really want to check out the second season.
Yeah, it's an interesting experiment. They brought back the same cast, but they've cast them as different characters in an all-new story.
Right, and they're doing that again, I guess, for the third season that's about to start.
Yeah, so that's...
The first season was kind of fun, trashy horror show. It wasn't... It took some weird leaps, but I liked it.
let's see. We've got the complete series of The Guild, which is a show that I find – a web show that I find surprisingly good, way better than I thought I would find it.
Yeah, I watched the first four or five seasons and I enjoyed it for the most part.
There's Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing.
That's right. Yeah.
Good. I laugh because it sounds like a joke.
Right. And right next to it, Monster High.
Not the right Monster High though.
Oh, you're right. So close. Someday.
You got Danny Trejo in a priest outfit in Zombie Hunter. So that's good. Everybody knows Danny Trejo is super Catholic.
All right, lots to choose from for sure. So let's we keep pushing through here. Inadvertently sees on the release of the week. Yeah, Eric,
I'll go with The Christmas Toy.
Nice, Mac.
How about Home Run?
Okay, Daryl.
That was mine.
That's good.
Oh no,
I got something here. All right, we got.
Don't take mine.
Dave, I think you can go in for the steal at this point.
Oh, yeah?
He's broken the 5-second rule. Yeah,
you can go in for the steal if you like.
All right, I'm just I go for the layup. Internal Affairs.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, that works. And then where the heck was it? It is there you go. Lawrence Always. Or Lawrence Anyways.
Anyways, all right.
Huh, interesting. I would have gone with In the Flesh. That was
not too bad.
Well, there's a lot of them that are I guess In the Flesh works. But there's a lot of them this week. The Hot Nights of Linden.
It's true. It's not as clear an answer as Lawrence Anyways, but... I mean, that's just, that was just so obvious. I didn't know that.
All right. Let's wrap this up with our ambush topics. You know how this works. So, Mac, go first.
Okay. This topic is a little out there. It's surprise beheadings. So not just a beheading in a movie, but one that you do not see coming at all.
Hmm. Okay. This is kind of marginal on that level because if you're thinking about it on those terms, it's actually kind of obvious. But I'm going to go with a scene in Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, in which a couple of bullies beat up a couple of kids and take their sled. And one of them decides to go ahead and go down the hill with the, on the sled. And they're just having a good old time. But as the sledder gets down to the bottom of the hill, Santa Killer is in the woods and out of the blue throws his axe and chops the kid's head off as he slides down the hill. So his headless body continues down to meet his little buddy.
Oh, jeez.
It's a classy movie.
That sounds real classy.
Yes. Fun stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's two. It might be one. Whatever. Nobody's seen either one of them. Who cares?
Right. Even though at this point I think I could probably say this clearly without, you know, incurring too much wrath. I'm gonna keep it vague. But there's a scene in the first season of Game of Thrones that is a surprise if you don't know it's coming.
That's true. That's good.
Oh, yeah.
There's a movie I watched called Eye of the Tiger starring Gary Busey. Does that ring a bell for anybody? No? Probably not. It's a 1986 movie. Returning home from prison, a Vietnam War veteran sets out to clean up his hometown because he's come under the control of a violent motorcycle gang. So essentially every plot to every action movie in the 80s. But I do recall it being fairly gratuitous and violent. And one way he was taken on the I remember the scene very clearly. He like takes a metal wire and strings it between two trees and baits a motorcycle, you know, a motorcycle guy to come chasing after him, and it chops his head off. And I have that vision of the, you know, decapitated motorcycle helmet head rolling around. So, and I do remember a pretty good last bad guy fight that Gary Busey has with the guy who just he like rams his face in a bunch of cocaine and the guy overdoses in mid fight. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah. So
I had to be some kind of genius physicist to be able to string the thing exactly so it.
It was impressive. Yeah, yeah. So I think he took some adjunct physics classes in prison while he was there. But I wonder if that ever made it out into DVD. So all right, go back to you.
Back to me. So for mine, it's Scary Movie Month. I was watching this old Hammer movie called Twins of Evil.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's actually a good movie. I liked it a lot. With Peter Cushing, plays the witch hunter back in the old-timey days. And there's a pair of identical twins, and one of them is being seduced by the evil vampire, and the other one is staying good and pure and virtuous. And it's a really good movie. It's very atmospheric, very dramatic. All the scenes with the witch hunter, like, kind of, you know, satiric. They're kind of, you know, poking fun at religion. And so I'm really getting into this movie, and it's all – you know, I'm like, okay, this is like, you know, atmospheric intellectual horror, psychological horror. You know, it's all about mood and everything. And then suddenly, in like the last 10 minutes of the movie, everything just goes nuts. And people are fighting, and everybody's getting stabbed, and there's blood, and there's gore, and there's innards. And it all begins with just this really just super graphic beheading. And you can see the bloody neck stump, and the gore is spurting everywhere. It's the only, like, gore and violence in the whole movie. Everything else leading up to that was just, you know, dramatic and intellectual and atmospheric, and then it just takes a turn and becomes mega violence at the very end. So,
and I give a shout out to Indiana Jones: The Last Crusade. The guy getting his clock cleaned at the end there as he goes
through
cobwebs, right? all right, moving on. I'll go next. Not really surprise, but odd moments to sermonize. So odd moments of moralizing or sermonizing, either in a TV show or a movie where they want to teach a lesson and it just doesn't quite fit. And yes, I'm thinking of something very specific, so too bad for you guys.
All right, well, I'm gonna go with one that fits and doesn't fit.
All right.
In the Kevin Smith movie Red State,
yes,
there's a very long scene where this charismatic religious leader of this group of wackos has this very long sermon that's very compelling performance. At the same time, there's like a kid like strapped to a crucifix, I think, in the background that they're about to murder. So, you know, it doesn't quite fit. Maybe it does, or maybe it does for that particular, religious group. I'm not sure if that's covered by the First Amendment or probably not, but.
At first I thought that was really difficult, your question.
Okay.
And then it popped into my head, and this is going far deep into the recesses of my movie watching. But the old Drew Barrymore movie, Far From Home, if anybody ever saw that, it's from 1989, and it's terrible. But it's about a girl who goes into with her dad to a trailer park, and one of the she gets this boyfriend or whatever, and his dad is a snake preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's these really long scenes of him trying to or him preaching about this stuff. And I'm trying to think of who the guy is. And I can't remember who the guy is. But I think I would recognize him. In any event, snake preacher in Far From Home.
All right. Very good.
Are we talking religious sermonizing or just kind of a message?
Message. Okay.
Well, we've spoken at length about Avatar on the show. But then there's also Avatar The Director's Cut.
Ooh, I did not see.
It's on the Blu-ray, yeah, and which I bought. Sorry, Dave, you'll have to forgive me.
No.
Avatar has its moments of speechifying and moralizing, but the director's cut takes it even farther. There's a bit where Sam Worthington is like sitting at their little headquarters there when he's in his wheelchair. He's not the blue person, and he starts going off on this rant about how the Na'vi have this precious resource, and we think we can just go in there with all our war machines and take it. And he starts slamming his fist on the table, going, "It's wrong! It's wrong! It's wrong!" And I'm like, "Wow, you're laying it on pretty thick there, Cameron."
So actually, that's how
it made the rest of the movie look a lot more subtle.
That's saying something. Well, for me, it's the finale of Arrow. The DC TV show, which I like. There's all hell's breaking loose. Like, essentially, a whole part of the city is just crumbling around them. It's catastrophe. There's death and destruction. And a couple of our heroes are in the car driving away from all this destruction. And they're trying to call someone to warn them or call for help. And the guy who's driving picks it up and starts to dial. And the girl next to him says, What are you doing? Don't text while you drive. He says, no, it's real important. She literally says, it can wait. And say, okay, and he hands her the phone, and she does it. So now, texting while driving is an epidemic for sure, but it's worth messaging to the young viewers of the CW. But just in that, when the world is literally ending around you, it seems like maybe that particular text couldn't wait, So.
And if anyone can text while driving, shouldn't it be the world's greatest archer?
Yeah, it wasn't Arrow. He wasn't doing it.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't doing it.
Was it Texter?
It was Texter, yes.
Okay. He's good. He's very, very good at texting.
That's right. And a sidekick, Lawler. Roffler. Lawler and Roffler. So there you go. Very, very helpful. It was very helpful to hear. So hopefully that registered with some of the kids watching the show. Okay, Eric, go ahead.
All right. Mine, what did I call it? That looks dangerous. Let me open it.
Oh, nice. It's good.
This one's easy for me.
Don't say it.
The layman configuration.
Damn you.
The puzzle box of Hellraiser.
Whatever the Hellraiser talk.
You're never going to beat me on Hellraiser, man.
Oh, man.
Thankfully, I did not choose that one.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Ark of the Covenant and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Good. Classic.
Bad news. Bad news.
Steal, steal, steal.
That's right. Know your audience, too. Go for a bunch of Nazis. Yeah, no.
Well, I'll go with another classic. Near the end of The Birds, when she's upstairs and she opens the door. Well, she hears a noise on the other side of the door, and then she slowly opens it. And, of course, it's all full of birds, and they all go nuts. The famous story behind that was that the actress had asked Hitchcock that. It's like, we've been attacked by birds all throughout the movie, and if I hear something on the other end of the door, why on earth would I open it knowing that there's killer birds on the other side? And according to legend, Hitchcock told her, you'll open the door because I tell you to.
That sounds pretty right. That sounds pretty well correct.
All right. Well, I was glad that was so easy for everyone.
Yes.
Part of my early Scary Movie Month viewings, I was on Netflix and I watched a movie that came out last year called The Possession, which is not a great movie. It's totally fine, but there's a kind of a preteen girl who they're at a yard sale. With her father and her sister, and she sees this cool ornately carved box that she has to have, and so she buys it. And of course, it can't be opened until she opens it and unleashes a demon that takes over her whole. But it seems like if you find a box that's that old with, you know, carvings in a language you don't understand, you can't get it open immediately, just put it back and pick up the Connect Four instead.
Right,
it's probably worth trying. It's probably worth trying to figure out how to open that box. I don't know.
Well, I know you would do it.
I would clearly do it, and that is why I am cursed.
Right, that's why you have moths flying out of your mouth.
Yeah, thank God this isn't a video chat.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, wrap this up, Daryl.
All right, Max was a little too similar to mine, so I went with a backup.
All right.
My original was Booby Traps. My new one is Fast Food Joints.
Can we choose one or the other?
Hard swing.
If you want to, sure. What the heck?
I mean, because it's Fast Food Joints. I feel like I'm either going to keep going to there's two wells that I keep going to, whether it's the Mac and Me, dance scene, or whether it's a Burger King, right? Yeah.
It's a great restaurant.
It is a great restaurant.
It really is.
It is. So if you want to do one or the other, but Beheadings wound up a little too similar to Booby Traps.
Booby Traps isn't bad. Oh, actually, more Arrested Development is coming. So
Is it?
Yes.
Okay. Was that official?
Yep, I read that. So I believe everything I read on the internet. So I'm going to go with Booby Traps.
Well, okay, I'll go. You mentioned Kevin Smith earlier. In his movies, we have the chain Moobies, a chain of fast food places based on the Golden Calf movie. And I don't know if it's still online. For a while there, they had a thing on his website where it showed all the fictional characters. It's like, you know, McDonald's and McDonaldland with all those characters. They came up with their own for movies. And the one I always liked was King Pat the Monkey, who teaches children the difference between good touching and bad touching as a fast food mascot.
All right.
Fast food. Or Booby Traps.
That's who your Booby Traps.
Trevor, if you can combine them, you win.
I've been trying. I'm trying to think of something that would.
I can't. I'll go with fast food restaurants. I'll challenge myself. So I'm not sure how many people watched Angel. Mac, you saw all of Angel, right?
Oh, sure.
There's a great sequence in season 4, maybe, I think, where Wesley is, you know, he's trying to decipher this prophecy about Angel's son. And he talks.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know what I mean? He talks to like some demigod or some, you know, prophet, and it is one of those big plastic cartoon characters you would order at a drive-through, right? The little speakers in there. So, and it's actually pretty decent little CGI. It comes to life, and he's getting all this cosmic know-how and information from this.
It's like this smiley cartoon face, and he's talking with this deep voice. It's like, foolish mortal!
Yes, it's very Whedon-esque, but a nice little light touch in a season that was pretty oppressively impressive. And it's,
I guess I'll go with the Booby Traps. Yet another not very good Netflix movie that I've seen so far this month. I watched The Collection, which I guess is a sequel to a movie called The Collector, about a It's kind of like no, we didn't see Saw, except yeah, we totally saw Saw, and then we made this movie about a serial killer who makes all these traps and he captures people and cuts them up and does all kinds of terrible things.
Nice.
I'm not going to speak tonight. It's basically
the third movie.
This is Collector, The Collection, The
Collectrix.
Is that a word? Sure.
No. The Collectible.
How about collect with an exclamation point?
That's the musical.
Oh, that is the musical. That's true.
I'm collecting. So I don't know what it is. It's the big.
All right, Daryl. Which one did you end up with then?
All right. If I'm going with fast food, I'm going with the massacre scene in the original Toxic Avenger, where after the blind girl's dog gets shot, Toxie goes crazy, and my favorite scene from that is him wrapping a crook's hands in the deep fryer cage and deep frying the hands.
Not bad.
That's my favorite part. If I'm going with booby traps, I'm going with an old – well, not so old, but the last movie that Lucio Fulci ever directed called Demonia, where a nun is running through the woods and gets caught in a pair of ropes that lift her and tear her from crotch to face directly in half.
Mm, fun.
And it's a terrible movie, but it's worth watching for that moment.
All right.
No, I'm glad I
could end everybody on a light note. So
I'm wondering what would have happened if Fulci had directed a Toxic Avenger movie.
Oh, my God. First, he's too expensive for Lloyd Kaufman gang. But yeah, if he had, it would have been a significant step towards serious brutality.
And with that, I always get to end on the word serious brutality. So that is it for the Friday Filibuster. FridayFilibusterDVD.com is our email address. Mac, take us away.
It's a great restaurant.